This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
I'm OBDK Kamau with Self-Determination.
Point 1 FM, this is KPFT in Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender identity. This is Queer Voices.
Good evening, this is Jack Lewinsky.
And this is Jennifer Renee.
I'm Deborah Bell.
I'm J.D. Doyle.
And I'm Glenn Holt.
And today is January 1st, 2007. Happy New Year's, everybody. We're here from our crew here at Queer Voices on tonight's program. David Elliott will be joining us with his Inside the Beltway and Beyond report. Christina Taylor from New York, representing the Transgendered American Veterans Association, will talk to Jennifer Renee. Motivational speaker Kelly Smith will tell us about how to make the most of the new year. Commentary, announcement, calendar news, and of course, this way out, this week's segment is Steve Pride on Pride Films, which sounds like it's going to be great. All that's coming up on this edition of Queer Voices. And I'm glad to say that we have everybody, almost everybody here tonight.
Yeah, Ellie has gone to law school, so she probably won't be around. Yeah, she will. But we do welcome anyone who wants to help out on the show to get in touch with us and let us know, and we'll get you trained and put you to work. So sometimes it's just answering phones, but that's an important job that has to get done.
Be a volunteer.
Yeah, that's how we all. Well,
that's right.
We all are volunteers. Plus, that's how all of us started. We came in and helped answer phones or do something. And
what kind of music?
You know,
what kind of music we gonna have, JD?
New queer music. You know, I was playing Christmas songs all last month, so now I've got some stuff saved up by artists, brand new releases.
Speaking of music, I got to see Dreamgirls, which was a fabulous movie. I'd really recommend it. Definitely has a gay theme in it. You know, family, being away from family, starting your own family. And it's gotten good reviews. It was a great, great theater piece.
How long a movie is it?
It's about 2 hours, I think.
Okay.
I just don't know, because, you know, when you go to the movie theater and it says such and such a time, you know, they play a lot of those commercials, although in some of the theaters, yeah, previews. But they also play commercials.
Yeah, they do now. That's quite irritating.
They do on the Internet.
Yeah.
You go watch a clip and they play a commercial first.
I know. I don't like that. You want to do, you start pushing every button trying to stop it.
No.
And it doesn't stop.
That's the price you pay.
Price you pay for free TV.
If you want a free video, you got to listen to their little ad.
Well, then it's not free.
Well, with us on the line is David Elliott, and we're starting out a new year. We're going to have a new Congress, and already the government's taking the day off tomorrow.
And David has predictions.
Oh, no.
Oh.
Happy New Year, folks. How's everybody doing? Happy New Year to everybody who's listening to Queer Voices tonight.
Happy New Year to you.
You know, before I want to get to the 2007 predictions, I'd like to say a couple of things about things that have happened in the last week in our country.
Okay.
Because it's really been a sad and momentous week. And surely things are awaiting us. Better things are awaiting us next year, and I'm going to be talking about those in a minute. But just for a moment, I'd just like to dwell on a couple of things. Last week, we lost our former president, Gerald Ford. And, you know, we can disagree on whether Ford was a very good president or if he was a not so good president, but none of us can really deny that he was a kind, conscientious, and compassionate man. You know, the really type of leader, the type of character that is sadly lacking in Washington, D.C. in this day and age. Last week, we also lost the most talented rhythm and blues singer of all time, James Brown. And last week, we had beamed into our living rooms via CNN and other networks the controversial execution of Saddam Hussein. And then just yesterday, we marked the 3,000th American fatality in Iraq.
And that fatality was from Spring, Texas.
From Spring, Texas. Good to know, Jack. And even tonight, as this program airs, the fatality number is going up. It's now up to like 3,006. We just got hold of reports of a few more. Jack, I have to tell you, and Deb, you're there in the studio, right?
Right. Jennifer and Jack and me, the one without the J.
Jennifer, Jack, and Deb, I have to tell you all, it would be perfectly understandable if, on the first day of this new year, you all and listeners of Queer Voices were maybe a bit down, maybe a little bit depressed. Perhaps what we need is like some over-the-airwaves prescription of Prozac for all of the all of our listeners of Queer Voices.
It's going to take something stronger than Prozac for me, David.
But I want to tell you.
I'm going to have to have some really good stuff.
But I want to tell you tonight that better days are ahead of us in 2007. And I would like to offer a couple of predictions.
All righty.
Okay. First of all, it is entirely worth noting that in less than 72 hours, the Democrats take control of Congress for the first time in 12 years.
Yay.
And for the first time, Deborah, for the first time in American history, a woman, Nancy Pelosi, will preside over the U.S. House of Representatives.
And she'll be third in line to the presidency should something unfortunate happen to the president and vice president.
Well, the joke is that the only thing that separates Nancy from the presidency is a pretzel and an electrical outage. But we're not going to go there. I have to tell y'all, things are kind of strange in Washington, D.C. tonight.
And why is that?
Well, around Washington, D.C., I have to tell y'all, we're having the warmest temperatures that we've had in a century. And cherry tree blossoms are starting to bloom. And over on Capitol Hill,
They're normally what, in March or April?
Yeah, that usually happens in late March, early April. It's very strange.
And we're having cold weather here.
It's
that global warming, I'm telling you.
Yeah, I'm not even going to go there. Over on Capitol Hill, thousands of Republicans are looking for work.
Too bad.
And thousands of young Democratic aides, young Democratic campaign workers, young Democratic activists are starting to flood into town looking for jobs. And that's kind of interesting. And I have to tell you all that I think that 2007 is going to be a really, really great year for us, a year of what I might call domestic bliss. Reconciliation, even. I think that we're going to see Democrats and Republicans working together, accomplishing things together. I think that we're going to see ethics reform in Congress. I think that we're going to see an increase in the minimum wage. I think we're going to see lower prescription drug costs for our elderly citizens. I think that we're going to see breaks for middle-income parents who are just trying like mad just to send their kids off to college. I think we're going to see the embracement of what has recently been called the opportunity agenda. The notion, ignored for so long, that Americans believe in positive in positive things, and that a compassionate government can produce positive things. Now, we're also, you know, going to see our challenges, and these are going to be in our foreign policy arena. Iraq, oh my God, you know, despite the November 7th election results, Governor Bush is now looking at increasing the number of troops there, if you can believe that. And, you know, problems in Iran, Syria, Lebanon, the Palestinian territories, North Korea, Somalia, Cuba, Mexico, Venezuela, you know it, you name it, we're going to have problems. But I feel good, as James Brown would have said, about 2007.
I can see you, you know, now with the cape and doing the dance and the movements to that.
On a cloud.
Yeah, yeah. I feel good.
It's going to be good. And you know, and I, Deb, I have kind of a funny story to tell you, if I can.
Sure.
I have these friends who get together every now and again to play poker.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just this little nickel dime game that we play. You know, you're the highest bet that you can bet is a dime. The lowest bet is a penny.
You're definitely a Democrat.
Yeah. Oh, yes. And it turned out that one of the guys that I was playing poker with bought these suits that were owned by Jack Abramoff.
Oh, wow.
And I got a picture of mine taken wearing one of these suits.
It's come to that. He actually had to sell off his suits.
Yeah, he had to sell off his suits. Yeah, and I thought that, frankly, I thought they were uglier than sin.
Uh-huh.
He had paid thousands and thousands of dollars for them. And my friend, I thought, had paid way too much. I mean, I don't know, somewhere close to $1,000 for them. And I thought that was ridiculous. And I thought they were ugly. But I just had to have my picture taken in one of them. And I did. And it was fun.
You're going to send that to us online, aren't you?
Oh, I could do that.
We'd like to see it. Then we'll show it to everybody on the radio.
And if you can figure out how to do that, more power to you.
Well, you know, J.D. kind of does that with his queer music heritage. He has where people can follow along as he plays the music and look at pictures and things. So, hey, it's coming, David. Technology is the new way.
You know, YouTube and MySpace and all that stuff, yeah, I hear you.
That's right. That's right. And so, while we're looking optimistic here, I just want to put out this scenario and ask you what you think about this, because this is what struck me. If we send more people to Iraq...
Even though we don't have the troops.
They were talking about taking trainees that are being trained to go and having them go early, and then have ones that were supposed to come back, not come back yet, but stay a little longer.
Even longer than they're already staying.
You're right. To increase the number of troops in Iraq so that they can... You know, do whatever it is that they think they're doing there so that we will win till the job will be done. What if there's some kind of natural disaster? What if something happens in a conflict with another country? Where will we stand? What will our chances be? If we can't even do this job... Which has already gone on longer than Vietnam.
Deb and Jack, I want to submit to you that that is a very interesting and important question, but I also want to submit to you that it is not the question. Okay? Let me back up a minute. Let us say that there is a huge natural disaster, or let us say that there is a huge... a war that needed to be fought, a legitimate war, I might say. You know, like a...
Although many of us would debate if there's ever such a thing, but...
Well,
yes.
Exactly. But,
just theoretically.
Let's say that all of a sudden tens of thousands of Canadians started pouring into our country.
Yeah,
right?
Blame Canada.
There would never, ever be any shortage of U.S. troops, National Guardsmen, volunteers, if it took to that, being willing to step up and to go and to do what was necessary. Mm. What we will not do, however, is we won't support it politically if it is a illegitimate war. And that's really what you're getting at when you ask me this question. I mean, the problem...
Oh, you know me so well.
The problem with President Bush is, you know, considering this quote-unquote surge of an additional 10, 20, 30,000 troops to go into Iraq, even after the November 7th election results telling him that that is the exact opposite of what Americans want. The problem has to do with political will. We're a democracy. We're a democracy. And, you know, we don't really commit our troops automatically without consideration of what the democratic will be. So that's the way I'd answer that.
I think we all should start carrying signs and having bumper stickers that say those words. We are a democracy. David, thank you again so much for being with us on Queer Voices. Oh, we know that you're the communications director for the National Coalition to Abolish the Death Penalty, but also a political activist with your eye on what's going on inside and outside the Beltway. And we really appreciate you joining us on the first Monday of every month on Queer Voices. And Happy New Year.
Thank you all, and a Happy New Year to everybody listening tonight.
Thank you. I never thought I was one of the lucky ones.
This is J.D., and that song is from my brand new favorite CD. And that's saying a lot. I get a lot of CDs. That's Levi Christ, The Gospel According to Levi. The song was called You Found Me.
This is Queer Voices.
And this is Jennifer Renee. Our guest tonight is Christina Taylor from New York, actually Long Island, New York, a decorated Vietnam veteran, war veteran. And we're going to discuss how the Veterans Administration is dealing with transgender veterans. And don't want to give up your anonymity, but you are transgendered. And but not only transgender, but also the gay and lesbian veterans. Welcome, Christina.
Hello, Jennifer Renee.
From what I understand, there's an organization, TAVA. Why don't you tell us about TAVA?
Yes, TAVA is the Transgender American Veterans Association.
And what do they do?
The TAVA represents transgender individuals and tries to set up and have the military understand the difficulties that the transgender individual goes through, and make sure that in the medical arena that they are treated with respect and dignity.
Are you talking about the Veterans Administration or within the services themselves?
Mostly within the Veterans Administration.
And currently, within the Veterans Administration, are there any standing policies, or does the Veterans Administration handle, like most other cases, they just ignore the problem?
Pretty much, they ignore the problem. The service agencies are pretty much, they don't understand transgender, and there is a current ruling, it's been on the books for many years, it's called Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Now,
but isn't that within the service itself?
Yes, exactly. But the problem here is that when a person explains that they are transgender, it...
Is that within the service while they're still serving or after their service?
It can go both ways, but okay. It's highly recommended that a transgender person should not disclose while they're in the service. It could be grounds for immediate dismissal.
Okay. All right. Let's assume they've hidden their identity like most GLBT people can. They're now they've served their time and they're trying to interact with the Veterans Administration.
Well, that's where TAVA comes in.
Okay.
TAVA is there to make sure that the people are treated with dignity and respect that all veterans are due.
Now, does this don't ask, don't tell, is that still in effect within the Veterans Administration? If someone comes in and tells, well, I'm transgendered, how does the Veterans Administration react?
Well, it reacts differently depending upon the area that you're in, the region of the country or the individual office itself.
Mm-hmm.
It's always a struggle for our transgender friends.
Is it what parts of the country are you talking about? You're talking about basically southern areas, or are you talking about small areas as opposed to metropolitan areas?
Small areas, less urban areas, the metropolitan areas generally have protections for transgender people.
Now, is TAVA just in the New York area around D.C., or is that a nationwide?
TAVA is a nationwide organization. If people are interested, they can gain more information about TAVA.
So how would they do that?
They can go on the internet, www.tavausa.org.
Okay. Now, is there someone in this area, around the Houston area, if there happens to be a transgendered veteran out there that's listening, and maybe they're wanting to interact with the Veterans Administration, or maybe they're having problems with Veterans Administration. Is there someone here?
Precisely, Jennifer. Yes, we have chapters in 16 different states, and yes, there is one actually in Texas. Again, you can go on TAVAUSA.org and search out the information is right there.
We do for your area. You can go in there. Okay. Now, tell me.
about, now, is, I know TAV is specifically for transgendered individuals, but for our gay and lesbian listeners, what's currently the interaction with the Veteran Administration with as far as gay and lesbians are concerned?
We try to work with LGBT groups in general to gain information on both sides of the coin.
Okay. Now, I understand where we're talking about. You were telling me something about New Jersey, was it? A story briefly before the show where it was a couple who were getting veterans benefits, but when the state passed, well, you tell the story. I'm not going to steal your thunder. You tell it.
Thank you. We have there's a case of an individual who is a service veteran.
And what state is this in?
Property in New Jersey.
Okay.
New Jersey, as well as a number of other states, allow veterans exemption. That means a lower percentage of taxes as a veteran's benefit on the state level. Now, this individual was receiving, as a veteran, lower taxes. When New Jersey began their domestic registry...
Now, this is for domestic partnership,
domestic
basically.
Partnership.
Okay.
Yes. What was very interesting is that once this individual was registered and had the same-sex partner, lost his... tax exemption, exemption.
Veterans exemption. Was there an oversight in the law, or did they plan it that way? Or was it something through the Veterans Administration and the federal government that caused the exemption to go away?
Apparently, this is something that slipped through the cracks. The individual had to go to court. He had to pay, attorneys to go to court to get back what was due rightly his as far as... his veteran's exemption on his taxes. He shouldn't have had to do that, but this is an interesting case where the individuals had to fight for what was due to him in the first place.
All right. So would TAVA, if you're in a situation like that, or maybe just interacting and trying to find get services through the Veterans Administration, let's say I were a veteran, I go out to the Houston Veterans Administration, I want to go there, just something simple, just simple medical care, not necessarily dealing with my transgender, but just being transgendered. Would TAVA help me with that if I have problems or if I'm treated rudely? Or is that what TAVA's for?
Precisely. In addition, TAVA will help direct you to various legal organizations so you can get the support that you need in case you do run into issues.
Like what organizations could you give us some idea of the resources that are available?
Yes, for one, SLDN, the Servicemen's Legal Defense Network.
Okay, and how can they get in touch with them?
Again, you can go through the TAVA website, TAVAUSA.org, and they have links to these different organizations.
Okay, what other service organizations? Is it mostly for legal help, or is it for support as far as emotional health when something like this? I mean, no, it's rather traumatic when you've served your country, maybe even shed blood or taken another person's life and have your country turn their back on you. How can TAVA help and interact with them?
Well, once again, TAVA can provide support in contacting the individual and setting them up through our networks that provide the different services, mostly in legal and social support.
What is your personal experience with Veteran Administration, Ben?
Fortunately, I've been working for a major corporation who has very good medical benefits, and I haven't had too much interaction with the Veterans Administration. My only interaction was a number of years ago. Being a Vietnam veteran, I also have disabled children. I sought their help from the Veterans Administration to find out whether there was any connection as to a service-related because I had disabled children.
Now, the children were born after your service?
Yes,
and
shortly
wasn't
after.
Now, as I understand it, there were a lot of servicemen that came back from Vietnam who had been exposed to Agent Orange, whose children were learning disabilities, deformations. There's been a lot of documented evidence. You mean to tell me, how did they react to your question?
Basically, it was a quick down and dirty, oh, you weren't there at the right place at the right time, and you weren't affected, goodbye.
Well, what kind of research did they do? I mean,
little to none.
Little to none. Have you tried to go back and appeal this, or are you still looking at that?
Well, as I mentioned, my medical benefits pretty much covered my family and my therapy through my children's therapy and doctor bills. And I've been talking with local veterans organizations, veterans of foreign wars at VFW, American veterans, and they're urging me to get in contact once again through their support channels to work with the Veterans Administration, and they're insisting to me that, yes, that I should pursue it. And I will.
Well, I think I have to agree that if there is a connection between Agent Orange or some other chemical agent used during the Vietnam War that could have caused some kind of birth defects in children, that the government is responsible. In some way, you know, they didn't want, there wasn't a label on that canister that they were loading on the plane or they were having men fill up. You know, it's unfortunate that the Veterans Administration now hasn't come forward. Now, I understand they're cutting veterans' money from the Veterans Administration. I know that Bush did it several years ago in one of the budgets. Is he still in the process of cutting?
Well, that's one of the first things that they seem to go after is veterans' benefits, unfortunately. There's another current push for cutting benefits specifically targeted at post-traumatic stress syndrome. Which we all know that
they're going to cut benefits for that.
Well, they're
what they send you out there. They train some kid, 19 years old. Because training team gives him a gun, goes out there, kills somebody. He comes back and says, "Thank you very much," and he's a basket case, living under a bridge, homeless.
That's the short version, yes.
Oh, okay. Well, I just want to make sure I got that right. We're talking with Christina Taylor and Tava. That's TAVA. And how do you contact them?
Once again, www.tavausa.org.
Thank you very much. This is Jennifer Renee in Queer Voices.
nothing but the present to live in. When you're touching me that way, you're making this eliminates all the barriers and all the pretense. Ooh, the moment we dress is the moment we change. Ooh, ooh, the heads goes the heart. As close as it's bound at the skin, our bodies seem to fit. We're in our own world like a bubble wrapped in a quilt. Nothing else matters, there's no interference. Ooh, the moment we dress is the moment we change. Ooh, ooh, your head goes to heart. Intoxicated by the pillow talk, the sweetest part of love, the only time we show the realized nature of the drug. Intoxicated by the pillow talk, the sweetest part of love, the only time we show the realized. Oh, the realized. Ooh, ooh, the moment we dress is the moment we change.
This is JD, and I promise you new music, and that's what you're getting. First up was Max Christopher. His CD is called Fresh Chrome. The track was called Sky, and all the way from England, a brand new CD. I just got it today by Drew Pilgrim. CD is called Magnetic Sideways Pull. The song was Nature of the Drug.
This is Queer Voices.
And we're back. This is Jennifer Renee, and we have one of our special guests back for a second time, Kelly Smith, who's the motivational speaker, and she's going to give us some guidance on how we can make this next year better. But what are you doing now, Kelly? Welcome.
Thank you, Jennifer. I'm a speaker here in Houston, Texas, mm-hmm. in my company's Inherent Power Services, speaker, trainer, and a consultant, and I do communications-based speaking. I teach leadership and do conferences for women talking about empowerment and basic communication skills as well.
Oh, well, how do we get in touch with you?
KellySpeaks.net, www.KellySpeaks.net, and it's Kelly with a Y.
Okay. Well, last year wasn't such a bad year, but how can we make it better? What can I do? I want to have a great year. What can I do?
Well, the topic that I speak on in January and February is New Year, New You. And one of the things that I like to do is to help people stay motivated and mostly, I would say, inspired more than anything, because I believe that if we're inspired, we're going to be motivated.
Okay.
Staying inspired is what's really important. And inspiration, to me, the definition is really seeing possibilities that I hadn't seen before, like getting past limits and not settling for ruts and being stuck in mediocrity and things like that. So really getting a good glimpse of that we are limitless beings, that we have creative potential out the wazoo, if you don't mind me saying.
There's just us here. Don't worry about it.
And that, you know, change, if you go with a belief system that change is going to happen, that's the way life is. We're constantly changing and evolving. Then why not harness change, quit resisting it, which is what a lot of people do as we get older and we settle and resign and give up on our dreams and things like that. Instead of resisting, settling, and resigning, go ahead and step into change and look for where we're supposed to grow. Like assuming that, well, instead of staying stuck, we're supposed to grow. So what's the next step?
Well, how can I do all this? What is there anything that I could do, or we can tell the audience out here, maybe an exercise, something we can think about that we can do tonight and we can take with us that can help?
You know, when I speak to groups about this topic, what I do is I talk about vision plans, dreams, visions, getting your dreams off the shelf, dusting them off and putting them back into place, because everyone has had dreams, and they usually when they were young. The first dream that I ever had was when I heard a speaker. The very first time I ever heard a motivational, inspirational speaker, I was 24 years old, and I knew sitting out in the audience that was what I wanted to do. Every part of my being knew it. I was in the chair, wiggling, squirming, going, oh, 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 that's what I want to do. Oh, oh, oh,
I can
oh.
just see that.
Yeah. And later I did some exercises, read some books, participated in some groups and things like that for dream building and visions and goal setting and stuff. And when I did the exercises, that's what came out. That's exactly what came out. And still to this day, when I revisit those exercises, which I do, yeah, it's the same thing over and over again. I have a message. I want to get it out to the world. I like to help people. I like to entertain people. I want to talk and speak and train. And so one of the exercises that I've done is, what would you do with the rest of your life if you never had to work another day? Now, I was reading a book this weekend.
Okay.
And because I was studying and getting ready for the new year, and I was doing a bunch of writing and goal setting and rewriting my vision statement and whatnot. And this particular individual, what they did was they posed the question, instead of just, what would you do with the rest of your life if you never had to work another day in your life and you didn't have to worry about money? They did if I was a rich man.
Do we break into song now?
Yeah. And I thought that was really creative, and it really was effective. Man. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. If I were a rich man, blah, 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 blah. What would you do? Okay.
And then sort of like if I were to win the lottery or something. Yeah, okay.
Well, yeah. If you are a rich man, and then the first thing that comes, you write that out, and then you ask the question again, and you just keep asking it, if I were a rich man. And that's the way this individual did their exercise. Mine was simply, what would you do with the rest of your life if you never had to work another day and you didn't have to worry about money? There's another exercise that's excellent to get you revamped into a larger picture, a larger vision, a larger, more meaning and purpose in your life, tapping into your natural talents, strengths, and abilities. Like, what would your purpose be? Where are you naturally strong and talented? The other one is to write your own eulogy.
Oh.
Have you ever done that?
A matter of fact, I did in a psychology course in college, as a matter of fact. It's rather interesting. Yeah. It poses a great question at the, you know, especially at that time in my life, you know, I'm early 20s, and to even think about mortality for a 20-year-old that's beyond our comprehension. But actually think at the end of our life, what would people think about us? Or what do we want them to think? With this, okay, tell us about it. What do I do?
Well, you write a eulogy, and a eulogy for some people may not really know what that is. The first time I did that, I was in my mid-20s, and I wasn't totally clear. I had gotten that one from Stephen Covey's book, 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. And so I had to keep reading. What is a eulogy? I think I know what it is. What is a eulogy? It's what someone would stand up and say about you at the time of your death, your funeral, your memorial service.
Oh, okay.
And what that does is, again, that it is an exercise that helps you expand out of your everyday vision of yourself, your everyday kind of like how you see yourself, how you see the world, gets you more into understanding what your personal values are, not the values that your mom and dad taught you, don't lie, don't steal, don't cheat.
Mm-hmm.
Right from wrong? Good
right,
from
I
get.
Remember that.
Okay, yeah, those?
That was that,
those
that, was that lesson. Yeah,
yeah,
it was a good lesson.
Good,
heck
good.
Worked
yes.
well all my life.
You little liar. No. So, yes.
Well, that's exactly the truth, give or take a lie.
Right. right. So a eulogy helps you get in touch with your values and also will bring into your sight more about what, if you believe that you have a purpose, what your purpose is. Like, what is your expression here in this lifetime? What are you up to? What's your life about?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's your message to the world? Where are your natural talents, strengths, and abilities again? And then once you do exercises like these two, which there's plenty more, but those are the two most profound ones that get people started.
Okay.
Then you start to see something that you begin to remember stuff that you always loved and wanted, and you start to remember things that you dropped, things that you need to bring back into your vision, into your light. You write out a vision, like, what is your vision for your life? And
I think a lot of people have a trouble with that because they can't see past today or maybe tomorrow or Friday. I can't see past Friday.
A lot of people live on a day-to-day basis. Nothing wrong with that.
Mm-hmm.
But it usually doesn't create a lot of fulfillment.
No, it doesn't.
It really sets up the survival mode of living. And the mode of living that I teach and that I work to practice, and practice it imperfectly, but definitely stay focused on it, is not living in survival, but living in the world of possibility, the world of visions. And it goes beyond. It's kind of like what I have found for myself is that if I'm in the day-to-day survival, then I'm not in my dreams and my visions.
Okay.
So I need to stay focused on and keep my attention into my dreams and visions, and then I can create, because when I'm in survival, I can't create beyond day to day. This is the next thing I do. I get up, take a shower, go to work, you know, go grocery shopping, feed the kids, go to bed.
Sounds familiar.
Yeah.
No, is there something? I know you've said about something. If I didn't have to work again, and then about writing my eulogy,
mm-hmm.
and then you know, creating a vision for myself, mm-hmm. a master plan, if you will. How do I break through this you know, this day to day to get where I can actually sit down and do something like that? Is there, what's the trick? I need something. I need some help.
Well, that's what the new year, new you. Is about. It's like, it's not too late. Today's January 1st. You know, take some time and do some writing and bring your energy level up. Bring your ability to see your life and understand that your life really makes a difference and that you have something to express while you're here, that there's a purpose there. And write it out. Write out what your vision is. It's not much different than the work that I did with you a few years ago. We didn't write it out.
No, we didn't. Yes,
but I coached you on it. And so that's another thing that you need to know about this type of work is that you need witnesses. You need people, whether you write it out or not. The point is that you do it with other people. Like, you have other people who are interested in doing this with their lives, mm-hmm. and you witness each other's visions and dreams. And then you back it up with some goals. You write down some things that you definitely know you need to do right away that's beyond your everyday stuff.
Well, and
action
working,
steps.
Yeah, and working with somebody, it's about accountability. If I share my dream with mm-hmm. you, my goal, what I want to do, and I share it with you or several people, I'm being held accountable, even if there's no punishment involved, but I'm accountable to what I say. And I understand that completely. When Kelly was telling me, when I was in one of my very low financial insanities of life, Kelly helped me sort of focus in on what it was I really wanted to, you know, look down the road, Jennifer, what is it you want to be? What do you want to be doing? And we started on that path. It was mm-hmm. simple, a vision. I had mm-hmm. a vision, and I shared it with a number of other people, and suddenly, not suddenly, but over a period of years, a lot of it's come true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the way I remember it is your vision has not stayed the same. The vision that I had for you is what's happened.
Oh. Oh. Are you trying to say I was wishy-washy? Well, it's true.
No. The way I remember it is your vision had more to do with, like, acting and...
Yes.
And screenwriting and things like that. Mm-hmm. And that's great. That's still part
still
of what
I'm
you...
I'm still breathing.
That's right. But what I saw was, I saw more of your purpose. So I saw you being politically active. I saw you speaking. I saw you in front of groups. And you told me that I was trying to get you killed. Do you remember?
That's exactly, that is a quote. Yes, you did. I said, you're going to get me killed. I'm going to stand up there and somebody's going to shoot me.
Right. So what we did was I asked you at the time that I held up this tremendous vision. I was like, I was inspired. You weren't that inspired. You were scared.
I was frightened, yes.
I was on fire with inspiration and you were like, but what we did was we came up with an immediate goal for you in order to help you get your bills paid because you couldn't get employed anymore in your field as a transgender. And then
it made a difference.
Things started happening. Yeah. The vision I had asked you to keep in mind, even though you were scared to death of it, you were open. I asked you, would you please stay open to this? Because I think you have a strong message. I think you're going to help a lot of people. And you did listen to me. You got it. And now look at what you're doing.
Wow. All right. Okay, you were right. She's good. She is really good. And how do I get in touch with you?
My website is kellyspeaks.net.
Thank you again, Kelly, for coming, and we'll have you back again. And this is Jennifer Renee, and this is Queer Voices.
Before, walked in and out that door, and now I find myself standing here again. You tell me this is new, 'cause this time it's with you, and you're not like any other man I knew. It's not so easy to have lost and then to try to love again. And so I'm searching for the answers that will tell me how to begin. What will I do? What will I say? When you look at me that way, what will I feel? How will it be to have your body next to me? Just might let you in. You make me feel at ease. I've longed for days like these, but part of me still thinks I'm better off alone. Well, I'm looking for some kind of sign to let me know it's all okay. 'Cause when I met you, I had no next.
of you. So I can smell the cheap perfume of loneliness, my love. I stumbled around this old beach town. Baby, what else could I do after you? After you, you know I fell down, yeah, I fell on my face, I fell on hard times. I thought you'd like to know after you. After you, I let myself go, yeah, I lost control, I thought you'd wanna know. This is what happened after you. Honey, I crashed the car that we drove all the way from Ontario. Guess I've been sucking too hard on the tit of my oblivion. Found out just how far a man could fall. After you, after you, you know I fell down, yeah, I fell on my face, I fell on hard times. I thought you'd like to know. This is what happened after you. I took this ugly room with a parking lot view, so I could smell the cheap perfume of loneliness, my love. Just how far a man can fall. After you, after you, you know I fell down, yeah, I fell on my face, I fell on hard times. I thought you'd like to know. Let myself go, yeah, I lost control. I thought you'd want to know. This is what happened after you.
More new music. This is JD. That first song was called What Am I Going to Do With You? It's by Sean Thomas from the album Faith Unashamed. And also brand new by Micah Barnes, B-A-R-N-E-S. The song After You is from a brand new CD going by just his name, Micah Barnes.
To discover what KPFT is like during its most energetic moments, now's your chance. Starting in late January, KPFT kicks off its Winter Pledge Drive, and we need your help to make it a success. You can put your spare time to use by volunteering to answer phones during the drive. Our phone volunteer trainings are Sunday, January 14th at 10 a.m. and Wednesday, January 17th at 6 p.m. The sessions will be held at KPFT Studios, 419 Lovett Boulevard. You'll meet KPFT listeners just like you, make new friends, and help this community radio station. In just an hour or two, you can help us handle pledges. Your efforts make a difference, and you can make this a fun and successful drive. Evenings and weekends are available. Again, those phone volunteer training dates are Sunday, January 14th at 10 a.m. and Wednesday, January 17th at 6 p.m. They'll be held at KPFT Studios, 419 Lovett Boulevard, near downtown Houston. Visit kpft.org to RSVP for the training or just come on by. You're tuned in to 90.1 FM KPFT Houston.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Polensky and the entire Queer Voices crew.
Happy New Year, and welcome to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Another tumultuous year in the global struggle for LGBT equality was also reflected on big and small screens during the past 12 months. We'll catch up on what's been happening in or affecting sexual minority communities around the world when NewsWrap returns next week. But now, in the second of our two traditional holiday season special programs, award-winning entertainment reporter Steve Pride has consummate clips and comments by their creators as he recalls some of the queer moving images that moved him most during the past year. So dim the house lights as we proudly present Pride on Screen 2006.
Hello, I'm Steve Pride, and welcome to a very special Pride on Screen. Sit back, relax, and butter your popcorn while we look at the best LGBT images on screens both big and small for the year 2006. It's no secret that one of last year's films had an impact that is still being felt. This year began with Gay Cowboys at the Oscars, and by its end, the word Brokeback had become a pop culture adjective. But what about the new films of 2006? How do they stack up against this?
The bottom line is, we're around each other, and this thing grabs hold of us again in the wrong place, in the wrong time.
Before we get to my list of the top 10 theatrical releases, let's take a look at the increasingly important role of the small screens. According to the Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation, GLAAD, there were fewer LGBT characters on network television, but I think the quality of those gay depictions belies questions of quantity. For me, the best of the best is the character Kevin Walker on the ABC Network's family drama, Brothers and Sisters. Refreshingly, he has a love life.
Oh my God, you're gay!
If you could answer the question, because these guys have lawyers that will shred you.
I'm not prepped anymore until you admit you're gay.
Yeah, I am gay, so, I mean, whatever.
The ABC network also brought us the American version of Ugly Betty, with not only the flamboyant Mark St. James, played by openly gay actor Michael Urie, but Betty's nephew Justin, a character we rarely see. The gay on the way.
You guys did an awesome article last December on how to make icicles out of Mylar. I saved that issue.
Really?
Well, more for the article on that old queen of Hungary.
I didn't know you were into history.
She used to sleep wrapped up in a sheet with raw steaks. It removed her toxins. Her skin was flawless.
Flawless?
Flawless.
This year we also saw the last episode of the groundbreaking Will and Grace.
Hey, Jackie.
Hey, Care. What's the story, drunken Hori?
Do something to get Will and Grace back together. Honey, it's been almost 2 years.
But why does it always fall on us to help those two?
I know, Poodle. You know, sometimes it seems like our sole purpose in life is just to serve Will and Grace.
Right? It's like all people see when they look at us are the supporting players on the Will and Grace show.
On American cable television, Logo, the LGBT cable network, debuted the reality show Jacob and Joshua, Nemesis Rising, where gay twins from Minnesota dealt with moving to Los Angeles, coming out to their Jehovah's Witness parents, and trying to break onto the pop charts all at the same time.
We're going to acknowledge in the marketing of this project that you are a gay duo. You're comfortable with that?
I always anticipated carving a career out just like everyone else before us and dealing with those issues later.
I think we got to be realistic. I mean, it is who you are.
and Logo launched another season of Noah's Ark, a rare comedy about gay men of color.
God, Trey's been back from Africa for a month already, and they're still having sex 10 times a day.
Yeah, can't they make do with 5 times a day like normal people?
People are still having sex? When do they find the time?
And I have to give props to the gay on-demand network Here TV, with its signature original show, the spooky and sexy Dante's Cove, which begs the question, will we watch bad actors if they're really, really pretty and shirtless? Are we that shallow?
You don't abandon the people that you love, Van, no matter how much it hurts. Tell her the truth about the magic, the amnesia spell, everything. If she hates you for it, she hates you. That's the risk you take.
God, I love that show. Here TV also continued their commitment to low-budget, guilty pleasure genre films. They turned out Shock to the System, another film in the Donald Strachey mystery series, starring Chad Allen as a gay detective, and brought us a slew of horror, sci-fi, and action-adventure films. In Deadly Skies, a gay, discredited former Air Force colonel played by Antonio Sabato Jr. must destroy an asteroid before it hits the Earth.
A military hero must choose.
I really need to speak to you.
Between a new beginning.
I was done living lies.
They didn't ask, and you certainly didn't have to tell them.
And their only hope.
In Hellbent, a serial killer threatens revelers attending the gay Halloween parties in West Hollywood.
Damn!
Oh, man. Double Daddy got some serious package.
Damn, what's he doing?
Oh, man, he's living it out.
Yeah, show us, Big Daddy. Come on.
Here it comes, here it comes.
What's he got there?
That's nice.
In Her Line of Fire was an action-adventure film starring Muriel Hemingway as a lesbian Secret Service agent who must save the Vice President when his plane goes down.
When the Vice President is on a phone call with the White House Chief of Staff, don't put a camera in his face. Got it?
Got it. But, I find it interesting that you don't get on Kendall's or Murphy's ass. What is it about mine you find so attractive?
Perhaps the biggest development in 2006 was the increased accessibility of shows via streaming content on the Internet. This meant for the first time, regardless of geography, you could see Ugly Betty on ABC.com or Noah's Ark on Logo.com. The gay-focused OutZoneTV.com launched with offerings that ranged from reruns of the 2004 Bravo series Manhunt, The Search for America's Most Gorgeous Male Model, to the groundbreaking 1972 TV movie That Certain Summer. Plus online pay services such as iTunes, and that keeping up with the gay or lesbian characters on MTV's The Real World or drooling over Tim Gunn on Project Runway is only a couple dollars and mouse clicks away.
And basically make it work.
Yes.
Diana, this is make it work time for you.
Ow.
You have to make this work. This is the classic make it work time. All right?
Hi, this is John Cameron Mitchell, the writer-director of Hedwig and the Angry Inch and Short Bus. And you're listening to a very special Pride on Screen on This Way Out, the international weekly radio magazine for all our sexually diverse communities.
Now it's time to look at the 10 best LGBT films of 2006. With more gay and lesbian characters finding inclusion in films that are not about their particular sexuality, defining queer cinema these days is difficult. Sure, something like another gay movie in which randy gay boys compete to lose their anal virginity is still easy to label gay movie, especially since the title is another gay movie. But is Steve Carell's brilliant gay turn in Little Miss Sunshine less important because it was an ensemble film? I think the answer to the question, what is a gay film, can be found by asking, who's the intended audience? That said, I should point out that number 10 on my list doesn't have a single major character that is gay or lesbian.
You already supply AZT to your employees.
What else could I do?
Well, you could extend your charity to the community through the mission.
This isn't a charity plan. A quarter of my payroll carries the virus. Soon it's going to be half.
What about their families?
Financing the survival of Africa. Bankrupt me in a day.
Three Needles is a trilogy of stories that relate to each other only through the circumstance of a worldwide plague. In South Africa, a nun makes a personal sacrifice for the benefit of an impoverished village. In rural China, a black market operative posing as a government bloodmobile worker jeopardizes an entire town. And in Montreal, an HIV-positive porn actor schemes to pass his mandatory blood test. It has an all-star cast that includes Stalker Channing, Olympia Dukakis, Lucy Liu, Sandra Oh, Chloe Sevigny, and Sean Ashmore. and it was written and directed by out gay Canadian filmmaker Tom Fitzgerald, best known for The Hanging Garden, Beefcake, and The Event. One surprise in Three Needles is that it focuses primarily on heterosexual characters.
In the big picture of AIDS, gay men make up a tiny fraction of people with AIDS. There is no one face of AIDS. From culture to culture, from Africa to Asia to North America, it's unrecognizable. I think that must be part of the reason why we don't come together to fight it. It's a different monster in every village.
In Tom Fitzgerald's last film, The Event, the monster was in a very different village. That film was about AIDS and the gay community in New York's fashionable Chelsea district.
I felt when I was making The Event that I was not making a gay film. I felt like this was a story I was making for my mom and for all the other moms out there in New Jersey. Gay people knew that story inside out and backwards. This was not going to be something enlightening to us. So with Three Needles, though, I think it's actually a film that gay people do respond to particularly.
Number 9 on my list is also a film that's about more than just the gay experience. Red Doors is a hilarious and revealing film about an Asian family living in the U.S. and dealing with the colliding worlds of their traditional heritage and their current reality, the choices they must make as individuals, as members of a family, and as Asian Americans. Are sometimes humorous and sometimes heartbreaking.
I'm Georgia Lee, and I'm the writer-director of Red Doors. Red Doors is a film about a dysfunctional Chinese-American family in New York. It's based on three daughters and the relationship with their parents. And for me, I feel like the film is mostly about a coming of age of the family. It's an ensemble cast and how kids and parents grow apart emotionally and physically as everybody grows older.
And for LGBT audiences, there's Julie, the shy middle sister, a fourth-year medical student whose only social outlet is her weekly ballroom dance class. Julie has always been the quiet center of the Wong family storm. However, her world is turned upside down when she meets Mia Scarlett, a movie star researching her next role at the hospital.
What can I get you?
Two Valencias, please.
What's in that?
You coat the inside of a martini glass with Fino sherry, flame a few orange peels, use chilled gin, and strain.
You bartend?
Sometimes.
Then why don't you try it?
I've never had a Valencia. It was invented in the 1930s by a bartender at Chasen's in Beverly Hills. It's also called the Flame of Love. Because Frank Sinatra had one and fell in love. And then he threw a party at Chasen's and ordered 200 of them. A lot of love.
And it's a lot of oranges.
You know, I couldn't peel an orange or corn apple until I was in college. My mother always washed and cut everything for us with these little toothpicks. The first time I tried to peel a potato, I almost lost half my finger. When I used slice and dice people with the best of them.
Well, after carving a watermelon, heart transplants are nothing.
Your Valencia doctor.
Film number 8, Strangers with Candy, features out gay author David Sedaris' kid sister Amy as a bisexual adult going back to high school after a few years in prison.
Jerry Blank started developing, I was with my brother David Sedaris, and we met this woman, her name was Jean, and I got the Jerry voice by imitating David, imitating her. And so once I had the voice, the face came along.
Principal Blackman is busy. Have a seat.
What's shaking, Red? Carpet match the drapes? I'm Jerry. Jerry Blank. What are you in for? Boost some goodies? You can call Mama.
I didn't make my school fundraising quota. They're probably going to call my parents.
Oh, it's no big deal. Tell you what. Usually I look out for numero me, but I like you. You're sweet. So I just might be willing to take you under my spicy buffalo wing. Some butter chop? I'll never slap you around unless, of course, you get out of line.
Also in the film, her closeted married science teacher, Chuck Noblet, played by Stephen Colbert, is having an affair with her art teacher, Joffrey Jellyneck, played by the film's director, Paul Dinello, who's cute enough to be a new gay icon.
Ha ha, gay.
Emma, I didn't know. I'm flattered. That relationship is just a heightened version of our actual relationship, you know, much to his wife's chagrin.
Look, Joffrey, I'm glad you stopped by. I'd like you to leave.
Sorry, what's happening?
It's over.
What are you saying, Chuck?
I need more out of this relationship than I'm willing to put in. I think I deserve better, don't you?
Film number 7 was produced on a micro budget, but is incredibly moving. Its star, Michael Urie, who also plays Gay on the American version of Ugly Betty, shows an unexpected range in this heartbreaking film. WTC View.
Hey, it's me. Leave a message.
Hello. I'm ringing about the advert in this week's Village Voice. I know it's a dreadful time, but if you could give me a ring, I'd be quite grateful. I'm at the St. Regis Hotel.
Hello there, this is Connor. I'm interested in checking out the apartment share you listed online.
In the wake of 9/11 theme movies, like Paul Greengrass's Real Time, United 93, and Oliver Stone's heavy-handed World Trade Center, writer-director Brian Sloan's WTC View is a refreshing, stripped-down take on the after-effects of the tragedy without the special effects. Based on his astonishing play, Brian's film is about a young gay man who places an ad on September 10th looking for a new roommate to share his two-bedroom apartment. Not only is it in Soho, it has a great view of the Twin Towers.
I'm Brian Sloan, filmmaker and writer. Basically was inspired by a very true life situation. On September 10th, right before I went to bed that night, I'd put an ad online on the Village Voice website for a roommate. And then the next day, you know, September 11th, I left the apartment. I stayed with my boyfriend out in Brooklyn. And a couple days later, I called my answering machine, and it was the strangest mix of these frantic messages of my friends wondering where I was, mixed in with people saying, oh, hi, I'd like to come see your apartment on September 12th.
So you don't have an apartment right now?
My place was down in Battery Park City.
Oh.
I shouldn't say was, and it's still there. They just won't let us in yet. Said all the units are covered in dust. Layer of toxic crap on everything.
Were you there when it happened?
No, thank God. I would have freaked out. I mean, not that I didn't freak out.
If you saw last year's film Capote, you know the basic story of my number 6 pick, Infamous. But this film is very different in tone, and this time out, Truman Capote is even a bit gayer.
What I love about our story,
the writer and director of Infamous, Douglas McGrath,
is that it starts as a light comedy and ends as something very dark, with him in a very, very different place. And essentially, the bulk of the movie covers a period of about 6 to 8 months, and yet I think it tells both the triumph and the tragedy of his life in that period.
Jimmy, will you confirm that there is more than one killer?
I will not.
Well, of course there was more than one, unless the killer was a hypnotist.
Beg your pardon, ma'am?
It's illogical to suppose there's only one killer. The Cutters were tied up. To tie them up, he'd have to put his gun down. Once he put the gun down, the Cutters would run for the hills.
I don't believe I know who you are. Or what?
I'm from out of town.
What's your paper?
Ladies Home Journal?
Oh, I'm not a reporter. I'm a writer.
My pick for number 5 didn't have a very wide release. It's from the Philippines, is in a combination of English, Filipino, and Tagalog. The English title is The Blossoming of Maximo Oliveros.
I'm Aurelio Sulito.
And you're the director of?
The Blossoming of Maximo Oliveros, or Ang Pagdadalaga ni Maximo Oliveros. The movie's about a young gay boy who comes from a family of thieves, and they live in the slums, and eventually he falls in love with the policeman. And this causes the ire of his family, and the conflict starts from there. Well, actually, the setting of the film is my street. It's where I grew up in. So it's my barrio, and actually I still live there. In fact, the house of the policeman is my house. So we have a nice house amidst the slums. It's always like that in the Philippines, an example of extremes.
At number 4, the History Boys made school a lot of fun.
In the timetable, our esteemed headmaster has given these periods the dubious title of General Studies. I will let you into a little secret, boys. There is no such thing as General Studies. General Studies is a waste of time. Knowledge is not general, it is specific.
Taking place in a British high school, or grammar school, as it's called in the UK, The History Boys tells the story of a group of 8 boys prepping for their university entrance exam in the early 1980s. While an ensemble piece, at its core, it's the story of young, gay, and Jewish Posner, Vlasta Denkin, with whom Posner is not so secretly in love, and two very different teachers. There's Hector, the ancient yet charismatic general studies teacher, who they idolize even though he gropes their crotches when he gives them rides on his motorcycle. And there's Irwin, a young gay teacher hired to show the boys techniques that will grab the examiner's attention. One of the most striking things about the History Boys is the casual acceptance of sexuality by the students and the faculty. Out gay director Nicholas Hintner explains.
Yeah, I have to say that was my experience, and it might have been exceptional. I was at school in the 70s, and I think that was because the pressure was to be cool. The pressure was not to be bigoted.
This is Gavin Newsom, mayor of San Francisco, the most diverse and welcoming city in the world, and you're listening to Pride on Screen on This Way Out, the international gay and lesbian radio magazine.
Number three is yet another breathtaking work from the handsome and brilliant Francois Ozon. In the U.S., it was called Time to Leave.
Hello, this is Francois Ozon, writer and director of Le Temps qui reste, A Time to Leave. I think the idea of the theme comes from my own experience. I was waiting for medical test, and like everybody, I was very afraid of the results. And during all the time, I was waiting for them because I have a lot of imagination. I imagined the worst situation, and I began to make different scenarios in my mind. And when the results arrived, it was okay, but I had still the idea in mind. So I tried to project myself in a film in which I could learn that I'm going to die very early, and to imagine what could be the reaction of such a character. It's like this that it began. I didn't want to make a film about disease. For me, it was important to have the confrontation of a man in front of his own death. So at the beginning, you have a big scene with the doctor at the hospital, but after, you don't care of the disease and all the medical things. I wanted to be focused on the journey of a character in front of his death and how he will try to accept, to reconciliate with himself and to cope with his own death. It was the challenge of the film. I think it was important that he could be gay because I think for a gay character, the idea of the posterity is more important because usually you don't have child, so after your death, there is nothing. And I think because he's gay, it's more painful in a certain way, and there is a twist in the film. He's able to make a baby, I don't tell how, but I thought it was more touching, and it was a way to lose this kind of cliché to say when you're gay, you die with AIDS. You know, you can be gay and die with another disease.
I went back and forth over the number two pick. For me, it could have easily been number one. And talking to this filmmaker was the highlight of my year. The film is the controversial and brilliant Short Bus.
I'm the mistress of Short Bus. It's a salon for the gifted and challenged. Hiya. This is where it all happens. My debut upon. It's just like the 60s, only with less hope. For a minute, I thought that man didn't have an arm.
I'm John Cameron Mitchell, the writer and director and producer of Short Bus. My last film was Hedwig and the Angry Inch.
John, what is Short Bus about?
At its heart, it's about the question we all have to ask ourselves is whether we are to be alone or not to be alone. It's about a group of young people in their 30s in New York, post 9/11, definitely exhausted by Bush, in this strange time where it seems harder to connect, where life seems a bit more powerless than ever before, even though we're supposed to be the most powerful country in the world. It's like this strange numbness that a lot of people feel here and trying to reach out and connect with themselves and with others. The idea of using real sex in a film that was emotional and humorous and a real New York story came when I was doing Hedwig and was watching a lot of films out of Europe. I mean, there's dozens of films just this year that have been using real sex and coming from foreign countries mostly. I had seen a lot of these films and I thought it was very fascinating to use that language of sex that we all know a few words of, but most of them were very grim and bleak. And I thought, well, there's more there than just bleakness, and there's more there than just titillation. You know, porn certainly has its place, but I think actually most porn is formulaic as Hollywood. So I wanted to de-eroticize the sex and see what was left over, like panning for gold. What is left is emotion, ideas, humor, all kinds of revealing things about our lives when you can sort of get the titillation out of the way.
My pick for the number one example of pride on screen in 2006 is from filmmaking partners who are real-life partners. Their film, Quinceañera, is about what happens when teenage sexuality, age-old rituals, and real estate prices collide.
Hello, I'm Wash Westmoreland.
And I am Richard Glatzer. We are the writer-directors of Quinceañera.
We moved to Echo Park in 2001 and felt much more at home there than we had in the Melrose area where we were living previously. Got to know our neighbors very quickly and were asked to be the official photographers at our next-door neighbor's Quinceañera, which was our first real experience of that event. And just over time, we'd seen the neighborhood changing. We'd seen it gentrifying. And one day, it was January 1st, 2005, it just occurred to us, sitting around hungover, talking about ideas for movies we had, what an interesting kind of soup our block is. And just, you know, multi-ethnic, multicultural, different races, different sexuality, different generations, that it was such kind of ripe material. People right next door to each other and yet not knowing about each other's worlds.
Carlos, played by newcomer Jesse Garcia, is a gay character we've not seen in film before. A proud Latino, muscular and tattooed, outwardly a tough cholo, Carlos is also very comfortable with his sexuality. When he has a three-way with his white gay landlords, it blurs the lines of who's seducing who. But issues of class, race, and power arise when Carlos has a separate affair with one of the two landlords.
Like this?
No, it's like this.
This one's an E.
This one's a P.
Echo Parque.
Echo Parque.
Be careful you don't flash everyone on Temple Street, though.
They're the rival gang, right?
They kill you.
Wow.
You really live in a whole other world, don't you?
Nah, you do.
Well, that's all the time we have. To recap, the bottom line is that 2006, in many ways, could not get out of the shadow of 2005. But there were many great films. Honorable mentions go to A Love to Hide, another gay movie, The Gymnast, and Little Miss Sunshine. The very best festival films this year were Boy Culture and Colma the Musical, both of which we'll see in theaters in 2007. My top 10 for 2006 were Three Needles, Red Doors, Strangers with Candy, WTC View, Infamous, The Blossoming of Máximo Olveros, The History Boys, Time to Leave, Short Bus, and Quinceañera. For more info on queer cinema, point your internet browser to prideonscreen.com. This is Steve Pride. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. This week, Steve Pride brought us Pride on Screen 2006, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen online to This Way Out anytime, exclusively at outinamerica.com. You can also click on the link at the top of our website, thiswayout.org. Most This Way Out operating expenses are funded by direct charitable donations from you, our listeners. We thank you. Please log on to thiswayout.org to see how you can help keep this program on the air. We literally can't go on without you, and you can choose from some special CD thank you gifts too, including this program. You can also bid on some terrific items at the Stonewall Society-sponsored online auction to benefit This Way Out. Look for our area at alternabid.com. To sign up for our weekly email program information messages and or our occasional This Way Out updates, email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us at Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappelle and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Greg Gordon. We wish you and yours all the best in 2007, and we thank you for listening on WWUH West Hartford, Connecticut, 5RRR Woomera, South Australia, Free Radio Asheville, Asheville, North Carolina, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Resolve to stay tuned.
This Way Out is heard every week as part of Queer Voices. You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT.
Please, please get out of my head. The diamond is gone and the tears are shed. And don't you look at me that way. I know what I feel and I'm not going to say. Oh,
What do you get when you put two lesbians together with a straight male drummer? You get the group The Damsels. Their CD is called Ashes. That very political song was called Collateral Damage.
This is Queer Voices.
Well, we start off the new year.
We sure have.
Yes, we have, haven't we? So this is 2 weeks in a row. We're here on a holiday.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
Well, because we're troopers.
Yes, we're troopers. And we got to do it. We got to do it.
Oh, by the way, happy birthday to Joan. I mean, not birthday. Happy New Year to Joan. I haven't heard from her in a while.
I know. Last year she just showed up here on the Christmas
and then this,
show.
Now we haven't heard of her. We're going to have to
investigate.
Yes.
Well, she's off there in Iowa. We've got a caucus meeting coming up on Wednesday.
That would be the Gay, Lesbian, Bisexual, and Transgender Political Caucus?
Yes, GLBT Political Caucus
good,
here
Deborah.
In Houston. And they're going to have a topic by the Jerry Brimberg of the Harris County Democratic Chairperson. He's going to be talking about, he actually talked to the board, so talk about issues about how we're going to get some of the judges elected in the next cycle.
Oh, that'd be so important because we don't have Democratic judges.
Well, they did it in Dallas. They got rid of a lot of those Republicans and replaced them with Democrats. So they're looking to do that here also. We came close.
I'll be one.
You want to run?
Sure. I'm so judgmental, I'd be good at it.
Can you get a fair trial?
So the caucus meets on the first Wednesday
of every month.
So that'll be this Wednesday.
This Wednesday on the 3rd. And they're still meeting at the community center, which is 3400 Montrose, Suite 207. Now the caucus and HERA, which is a Houston Equal Rights Alliance, has moved their office to a new location at 1915 Commonwealth at Welsh. And there will be general volunteer sessions on Thursday evenings and usually on Saturdays, but not this Saturday. And that new office, we're going to be doing things such as updating the database.
The famous database.
Yes, which is pretty much the project that I had envisioned. And now in the last couple cycles of the election, other people have realized how important that is.
Well, explain a little bit about how that works, Jack, about why having a database and what's in this database that makes it so useful as a political tool.
Well, there's a number of different things that all work together between the caucus and HERA. HERA, which was before that called Equality Knox, which was a joint project between the caucus and, at that time, LGRL, Lesbian Gay Rights Lobby, which is now Equality Texas. But basically, when the referendum was coming up, the statewide referendum that is now law, you know, putting it into the Constitution to discriminate against same-sex marriage, but some of the stuff we did was field work. Field work was knocking on people's doors, asking them how they felt about things. And then you would give them a number 1 to 5. 1 mean they were very positive about same-sex marriage. 5 is don't even try to talk to these people. So basically you try to find all the 1s and 2s, and then you put them in a database.
And then what?
And then when elections come around, you try to motivate these people to go out and vote.
Ah.
Get the 1s and 2s out there to vote. And so when they were working on this...
Is that what would be known as getting out the base?
Yes, GOTV, getting out the vote. Well, what was interesting is that there was a lot of concentration in District 134 during the referendum. And when that happened...
And 134 is the district that encompasses Montrose?
Well, it encompasses the west, Montrose going west, out to about the loop, a little bit further out there, the Bell
Area. I'm in it. I'm near the loop and
well,
all the Stella Link and
was split up
Braeswood.
When Deborah Danberg was representing this area, it was split up because of the Tom DeLay rigging.
Boo! Tom DeLay. We don't like him.
So then Martha Wong got in.
Uh-huh.
And the cycle after that, she got reelected. But this time, because we had built up the database and had done the field work and then continued to do getting out the votes, which includes knocking on people's doors to get them registered to vote in that area, also calling them up, sending out emails. Well, this election, it sort of paid off. It paid off that Martha Wong was defeated.
Yeah, and we like it when it works that way.
So basically, there's a couple ways of winning elections. One is you spend lots of money on radio and television, advertising, mailers, and stuff like that. Two is you get lots of volunteers, and you do the grassroots type of stuff. And since the caucus is poor, we do a lot more of the grassroots. We do, you know, some mail-outs, but mostly we do a lot of grassroots thing of knocking on people's doors and asking them to go out and vote and emailing and things like that.
And make sure that they have access to information and resources they need to make intelligent votes.
Well, and what the caucus does is, especially on this past cycle, when you go to vote, there's like 50 different offices you got to vote for. Now, how are you going to know about all those people? So what the caucus does is they screen everybody who's running for office in this.
Who wants the caucus's endorsement?
No, everybody who's running for office, they're invited to be screened.
Yeah, they're all invited, but only those that want the
You will not be endorsed unless you have asked.
Even, you may be perfect on all the issues, but if you don't seek that endorsement, you don't get it.
I mean, for example, even Sheila Jackson Lee, who it'd almost be impossible for us not to endorse Sheila, but she still had to go through the screening process.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, she did a screening at 10 p.m. at night on a cell phone because she was going from one event to the airport, I think, and she still knew that she had to do that and also fill out the written questionnaire. So that's how she got endorsed.
Yeah. And the fact that the mayor and governor level folks seek the caucus's endorsement is a real important gauge of how this work is so meaningful.
Well, and even though there isn't going to be an election till May this time, and usually in the odd number of years, there's only an election in November and possibly a runoff in December, because of Shelley Segal Gibbs, who decided to run for Congress and got that.
Thank goodness.
Yes. So she's no longer on city council, and there is an opening so that the next election cycle for that to happen would be in May. So we're going to have an election to fill that seat. So the caucus will be working in that election.
Any people have announced interest in that yet?
There's a few people that are somewhat interested.
Is that an at-large seat?
Yes, it's an at-large. But in city elections, you could register to run for a particular seat up until a month before an election.
So it hasn't got hot yet.
No, but it will be as soon as there's a couple names been mentioned. But in reality, so you can announce up to a month before the election. Well, early voting usually starts like 2 weeks after that. So, but anybody serious will be announcing earlier.
Well, it'd be a good time for people to get involved with the Houston GLBT Political Caucus. And again, they meet on Wednesday, January 3rd, starting at 7 p.m., lasting till about 8:30.
They don't last that long. We get those meetings pretty efficiently.
Yeah. It could last as long as till 8:30. But
we got to get out of there before happy hour is over.
I know. A lot of people go eat after the meeting together because we just all love each other so much. And that meeting places at 3400 Montrose Suite 207, the current location of the Houston GLBT Community Center. And the building is at the corner of Hawthorne and Montrose, and there are on Wednesday nights there's a big thing in the club at the top of the building, and there's parking attendants, and so you have to say I'm here for a meeting, and you get to park for free.
Right, and if you want some more information on the caucus, it's HGLBTPC. That's HGLBTPC.org, or call us at 713-521-1000.
Very good.
What else we got coming up? You know, we're starting a new year, so I'm sure a lot of the organizations and groups are getting back into their meeting cycles and stuff, and, you know, because December is usually a
season. You know, last year I started an endeavor called Diva House Concerts, which is, it's not even a non-profit because we just do it on an ad hoc basis, but JD has been a steady supporter because we've been bringing
very good events
into Houston some really wonderful performers.
We're talking Trett Fury,
Martine Locke,
Gretchen Phillips.
And in fact, February the 2nd at Super Happy Funland, we're going to have Sonia and Disappear Fear.
Really?
Yes.
I love her.
Yes. And we are hoping to...
is that where the Trett Fury event was?
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Nice venue.
And we will be... we're going to start having some of the concerts at Mojo Rising Coffee House, which is on Shepherd near where Jack's Grill is. It's
Jax.
Next door to
J-A-X.
The J-A-X, not
yes.
J-A-C-K like you. it's next to the Spaghetti Western. Okay, so you can go have dinner, then you can come over and enjoy the show. That's where Martine Locke will be in April.
Oh.
Yes. I better send you the
calendar.
Send me a list.
Well, please, because I need to know for plugging these artists, too.
Yeah, and, of course, Ann Reed, who was canceled because she had voice problems.
Yeah, she'll be back at the end of February.
February, I think it's the 25th. It's a Sunday at the Heinen Theater over at the campus of Houston Community College. Now, that's not a Diva House concert, but it certainly...
We strongly recommend it.
Yes, yes, we do.
Now, usually on January 1st, the applications for the Pride Parade are available online. They aren't this year. I'm not sure what's happening. But next week, we're going to have the new Director of Operations from Pride Houston to talk about what's coming up.
Is it her name?
Jeffrey Kuhler.
Okay.
I think that's how you say his name.
And next year, in 2007, the parade and festival will be happening in Montrose like it usually happens on the last full weekend of the month. But in 2008, they're looking at possibly moving it to a different time of year and possibly moving the venue downtown.
Who's going to decide that?
Well,
we are the community. And that's why it's really important. There's a survey online right now. If you go to pridehouston.org, and you can give your input to some of the questions they are asking, such as, should we change the time of year we have the parade? Should we have it downtown?
Leave it alone.
You know, or what the community wants. And
well, legally, in any nonprofit organization, it's the board of directors who make the ultimate decision of what happens in that organization.
But if this committee is going to be a democratic committee that is serving the community, then the community it's up to us to let our voices be heard.
There's a big community event on the 13th of January, Saturday, at Resurrection MCC Church, where at 1 p.m., where they're going to be discussing that.
And we're going to discuss it here next week on Queer Voices, and we'll also have call-ins. So if people have any particular questions or comments to make, they'll have an opportunity to do that.
Okay.
And, J.D., you have more new music for us?
We got a couple tracks scheduled. Yeah. Ready when you are, Glenn. Brothers in Arms and Sister Soldiers by Terry Christopher from his CD Journey of a Wordsmith. Before that, you heard Max Christopher and, well, he called it Stupid Happy Song from his CD Chrome. The engineer says, we got room for one more. Great. I love new music. We're bringing back Levi Christ from his new CD, The Gospel According to Levi, which is getting a lot of good press. And here's the track, Bittersweet Salvation.
You told me nothing good would I find inside. You told me of redemption for such a worm as I. I threw myself upon the body of your Christ, abhorring all I was and all I felt inside. I held a standard in the saint that ever said. 3 hours of daily prayer didn't even clear my head. The book of law kept my young body trembling in its bed. Afraid to wait to find my spirit dead.
You said he would save me. What now am I needing? Am I not what he made me?
Where the love, where the love, where the love?
Reach out to see somebody tell me where love is hiding. I now believe that there's a truth in this bitter, sweet salvation.
Covered the sorrow and death of every modern day. Took the thorn into my side and bled in Yahweh's name. 20 years of faith and fear and still you say I falter. I'm laying all this dogma dead up on the altar.
You said he would save me. What now am I needing? Am I not what he made me?
What the love, what the love, what the love?
Reach out to me, somebody tell me where.
Ooh, I love that. Again, Levi Christ. This CD officially comes out at the end of January called The Gospel According to Levi.
And we'd like to thank our guest tonight, David Elliott, calling in from Washington, D.C., Christina Taylor from the Transgendered American Veterans Association, and Kelly Smith, who's a motivational speaker.
Predictions on next week?
I predict that we will have astrologer Lily Roddy, who writes a monthly column for Outsmart magazine, and she's going to share with us what is in the stars for us in 2007.
Well, also, Jeff Reed from Houston Equal Rights Alliance will join us to talk about some politics. We love talking about politics,
don't we? And then, of course, we're going to have that special meeting with the new director of operations for the Pride Committee of Houston to talk about the survey they're conducting about possible changes to the parade and to give you a chance to give your ideas and thoughts by calling in. And of course, This Way Out, commentary, news, and
music.
This is Deborah,
J.D. Doyle,
and Jack Valinsky
wishing you, along with Glenn, Happy New Year.
Have been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 8 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Walensky. On-air voices are Glenn Holt, J.D. Doyle, Deborah Bell, Jennifer Renee, Greg Chapman, and Jack Walensky. Be sure to listen every Saturday night, Sunday morning at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. This is listener-sponsored and commercial-free Pacifica Radio, KPFT, at 90.1 FM, 89.5 FM Galveston, and worldwide via streaming audio from kpft.org. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
To discover what KPFT is like during its most energetic moments, now's your chance. Starting in late January, KPFT kicks off its Winter Pledge Drive, and we need your help to make it a success. You can put your spare time to use by volunteering to answer phones during the drive. Our phone volunteer trainings are Sunday, January 14th at 10 a.m. and Wednesday, January 17th at 6 p.m. The sessions will be held at KPFT Studios, 419 Lovett Boulevard. You'll meet KPFT listeners just like you, make new friends, and help this community radio station. In just an hour or two, you can help us handle pledges. Your efforts make a difference, and you can make this a fun and successful drive. Evenings and weekends are available. Again, those phone volunteer training dates are Sunday, January 14th at 10 a.m. and Wednesday, January 17th at 6 p.m. They'll be held at KPFT.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.